Jordan was getting in over his head, and he knew it. He was in no position to commit Prince Victor to anything. He'd better talk to his advisors quickly and let them decide what to do about the regent's warnings. He felt better almost immediately now that he'd shifted the burden onto somebody else. He started for the door and then stopped suddenly. He couldn't go running to Count Roderick in the middle of the night. He was a prince. It would look very strange, not to mention suspicious. He'd be better off sending one of the guards with a message. Jordan spun around and saw that the bloodhound was back, staring fixedly at an empty corner of the room. The dog stood stiff-leggedly, its head stretched out toward the corner. Jordan's hackles rose, and a cold hand clutched at his heart. He couldn't see anything in the corner, but when he was a child, his grandmother had told him that dogs could often see ghosts where people couldn't. And Castle Midnight was supposed to be full of ghosts.
Easy, boy. What is it? What can you see?
The air before him rippled and grew hazy, and the monk appeared in the corner. The dog backed quickly away, ears pinned back. Jordan's hand dropped to the sword at his side. He wasn't sure if there was anything inside the monk's robe that he could hit with a sword, but if the monk came any closer, he was going to have a damn good try at finding out. He glared at the darkness inside the monk's cowl.
I don't recall inviting you in.
Doors and walls are no barrier to me. I bring greetings from your brother, Lewis, and a message.
All right, give me the message and then get out.
You waste your breath in threatening me. You have no authority here, actor.
Jordan's heart stumbled in mid-beat, and for a moment he thought he was going to faint. The moment passed, but he could feel his legs trembling uncontrollably. He felt as though he'd suddenly dried in the middle of a big speech and forgotten all his words.
What do you mean, actor?
He took a certain amount of pride from the calm evenness of his voice.
There are no secrets from me in Castle Midnight. You have Victor's face and body, but that's all. I've seen the real prince asleep in another room.
You said you had a message. Get on with it, messenger.
The long gray robe seemed to stir briefly, and Jordan wondered if he was pushing his luck. This was one of the most powerful sorcerers in Castle Midnight, and all he had were the flare pellets up his sleeve and a few spare smoke bombs. Jordan tried hard to think which door was the nearest, in case he needed to make a sudden exit. The monk's robe grew still again, and Jordan relaxed a little. He still kept his hand near his sword, though.
I bear this message from your brother, Lewis. It's time to choose sides. Those who are not with Lewis are against him. Those who will not kneel to him are his enemies. Lewis will be king of Redheart, and any who dare stand between him and the throne will die.
Jordan waited patiently a while, and then raised an eyebrow.
Is that it? Lewis must be getting desperate. Tell him he can take his threats and stuff them. And if you ever enter my rooms uninvited again, I'll burn that mangy-looking robe of yours to cinders and then piss on the ashes. Now on your way, or I'll set my dog on you.
He turned his back on the monk and ostentatiously studied his appearance in a nearby mirror. Jordan counted to 10 slowly and then turned around. The corner was empty and the monk was gone. There was also no sign of the dog. Jordan had a sudden horrid suspicion that the monk had taken the dog with him as a kind of revenge.
Dog? Oh, you're just hiding.
He walked slowly around the room, looking under chairs and behind hanging tapestries. There was no sign of the dog anywhere.
Oh, how'd you get over there? Here, boy. Come on, come on.
He crawled under a nearby table.
Oh, ow!
Sorry, sir.
Jordan looked around and found himself face to face with a young boy, about 7 or 8 years old. He was painfully thin, with a narrow, pinched face and straight straw-colored hair. He stood awkwardly in that plaintive stance young children adopt when they know they've been caught getting into mischief. But his pale blue eyes were bright and steady, and his timid smile brought an answering smile to Jordan's lips. The boy was dressed in very conservative, somewhat old-fashioned clothes, but they looked neat enough. Hand-me-downs, thought Jordan sympathetically. We all go through it. He crawled out from under the table, got to his feet, and dusted himself off.
Hello, hello. What's your name?
Geordie. Everyone calls me Wee Geordie because I'm small for my age. Mother says I'll grow taller later on, though. Both my brothers are tall.
Well, Geordie, I'm Victor. Now, what are you doing in my chambers at this time of night? You're not really supposed to be here, are you?
Geordie bit his lower lip and looked down at his feet.
I'm lost. I'm looking for my mother. I can't find her. Have you seen her?
I don't know, lad. Can you tell me her name?
Lady Mary of Finbrook. She's ever so pretty.
I'm sure she is, but I don't think I've ever met her. I'll tell you what. I'll talk to the guards outside my door, and one of them will take you to the steward. She'll find someone to look after you while they look for your mother to tell her where you are. Is that all right?
Oh, I know Kate. She's nice.
Geordie hoped she didn't mind his dumping the boy on her. He couldn't think of anybody else. A small hand nestled trustingly into his, and Geordie gave it a reassuring squeeze. He led the boy over to the main door. The guards looked in surprise at Wee Geordie, and Geordie glared at them both impartially.
This young scamp managed to sneak in here without either of you spotting him. If you think you can stay awake long enough, I want one of you to take him to the steward and stay with him until they find his mother. Think you can manage that? Good. Because if I find out later that you just left him there on his own, I'll have you both peeling potatoes in the kitchens until your fingers turn brown. Is that clear?
Both the guards nodded emphatically, and one of them held out his hand to the boy. Geordie looked up at Geordie, and he nodded that it was all right. The boy transferred his grip to the guard's hand, and the two of them went off down the corridor. Geordie looked hard at the remaining guard.
See if you can remain alert from now on. Because if I get any more uninvited guests this evening, I'm going to be distinctly peeved with you. Got it? Good.
Geordie walked back toward his bedchamber. It had been a long day, and so far it had shown no signs of getting any shorter. He thought wistfully about the deep, soft mattress that awaited him.
Oh, you have got to be kidding me.
Geordie tapped his foot impatiently and began to seethe quietly as it became clear he was going to have to deal with whoever it was if he hoped to get any sleep that night. He strode over to the main door and jerked it open.
Now what in the world is going on?
Something about 2 feet high and dressed all in scarlet shot between his legs, scurried into his suite, and disappeared. Geordie barely had time to react before he looked up to see Damon Cord charging straight at him, brandishing the biggest solid steel mallet that Geordie had ever seen.
Move! Shut the door! Don't let it get away!
Now hold!
Shut the door!
Geordie shut the door. When he looked around again, Cord was standing very still in the middle of the room, his mallet poised and ready to strike.
Cord!
Quiet, Your Highness. It's gone to ground.
I don't care if it's gone abroad for the holidays. What is it?
A red cap. Nasty little buggers. They hide in the wainscoting and come out at night to feed on human flesh. They're particularly fond of children's flesh.
Cord began a slow quartering of the room, checking each possible hiding place with the maximum of caution. Geordie was reminded irresistibly of his own search for the disappearing bloodhound, but had enough sense not to smile. He didn't think Cord was in the mood to appreciate the funny side.
Why a mallet? What's wrong with a good old-fashioned sword or axe?
Red caps are notoriously hard to kill, Your Highness. Fire's the only thing that'll do it for sure. That's why I chased it in here. If worst comes to worst, you can always use your fire magic to fry the little bastard. Gah! Gotcha!
That... somebody's going to pay for that.
Cord barely even registered Geordie as he rushed for the red cap. In the brief moment he had actually caught a glimpse of the thing, Geordie got an impression of an impossibly wide mouth crammed with needle-sharp teeth. The creature picked itself up from the priceless set of ceremonial plates used by Victor's grandfather in court, now ruined, and reached for one of the legs from the ceremonial table. It hefted the ironwood leg like a club and grinned nastily at Cord. Geordie watched sickly as the creature's mouth stretched almost literally from ear to ear. The red cap was disturbingly human in shape, but impossibly thin. Its arms and legs were little more than pipe cleaners, but its magical nature gave it unnatural strength and vitality. Cord's mallet hit, instead of the red cap, a glass display case full of China miniatures.
Oh, come on!
Cord hauled his mallet free of the wreckage, destroying what was left of the glass case. The red cap wielded its ironwood club.
I'll get you, demon spawn!
The table leg missed Cord and sank half its length into the wall, driven into the solid stone like a nail into wood. The redcap abandoned its weapon as it ran from Cord. A centuries-old writing table and an ornamental hat stand fell prey to Cord's mallet along the way. Still entirely unhurt, the redcap took refuge behind an overstuffed armchair. A part of Jordan's mind was busy toting up the damages, even as he drew his sword and moved forward to join Cord. His new access to Victor's memories enabled him to remember exactly how much each piece of furniture had cost originally and how difficult they would be to replace. He had a horrible suspicion Victor and Roderick would decide this was all his fault and deduct the cost from his fee. Jordan decided he'd better do something to help Cord get the red cap while there was still some furniture left. He chose his moment carefully, leapt forward, and ran the creature through with his sword. The blade punched clean through the red cap's chest and out its back. No blood ran from the wound. The red cap grabbed the edges of the blade with his tiny hands, began to pull himself along the blade toward Jordan. Jordan dropped his sword and stumbled back a step. The red cap pulled the blade out of its body and threw the sword to one side.
Stay still!
The red cap was off and running again. Cord chased the thing around and around the room while Jordan got his breath back. The red cap scuttled under chairs and over tables, hiding in every possible nook and cranny, trying always to make it to the door or to the wainscoting. But somehow Cord was always there first to drive it back. Once, Jordan would have sworn the creature actually ran up one of the walls and headed for the ceiling before Cord intercepted it. But by that time, he was so confused from trying to keep track of it that he couldn't be sure what he'd seen. All he was sure of was the continuing rising cost of damaged furnishings. Fire, thought Jordan desperately. Cord said the red caps hated fire. He palmed one of his flare pellets and was surprised at how few he had left. He'd have to be careful how he used them until he had a chance to make some more. He pushed the thought to the back of his mind, nicked the wax coating of the pellet, and waited for his chance. The red cap went flying backward, right into the suite's main fireplace. The red cap simply exploded into a dirty, smoky gas that shot up the chimney and disappeared.